No one did more to usher in the scientific revolution than Isaac Newton, the mathematician, physicist, and astronomer, the man who gave us Newton's laws of motion, Newton's laws of universal gravitation, Newtonian fluids. But Newton was also an alchemist. He spent half his life pursuing the Philosopher's Stone, and he kept his observations in secret, coded notebooks and manuscripts. As the economist John Maynard Keynes said when he bought them at auction, Newton was not the first of the Age of Reason, he was the last of the magicians. Well, science historian William Newman has now decoded and even reproduced some of those experiments, and he's written the definitive book on the subject, Newton the Alchemist. Steve Paulson has been reading it.
There are a couple of things you have to know about alchemy in the 17th century. First, it was the chemistry of its day, or as historians now call it, chymistry, spelled C-H-Y. This emerging science seemed to have the amazing capacity to transform matter itself. So potentially, you could change one substance into anything else. And the other thing? Practicing alchemy was dangerous, especially if word got out that you were good at it.
There are lots of stories about how alchemists were locked up by vindictive rulers who wanted to extract their secrets and wouldn't hesitate to use torture, for example. And some of these stories are actually true. For example, there was an alchemist in the early 18th century named Johann Friedrich Bertger, who was locked up by a Saxon ruler named August the Strong. And actually, August managed to turn him away from his transmutational efforts so that he invented porcelain. And that's actually the origin of the Meissen porcelain industry in Germany. It goes back to this man, Bertger, an alchemist.
The only thing worse than being a successful alchemist? Being a fraud.
There were also alchemical charlatans who were playing the noble courts of Europe in the 16th and 17th century for all they were worth. If they were exposed as frauds, they would typically be executed, and often in quite nasty ways.
So was alchemy considered a kind of magic?
That's an interesting question. Like most of these questions, things can get complicated and nuanced. But to Newton, at least, alchemy and magic were distinct. I think in his mind, magic was associated mostly with demonic magic. There is yet another feature, though, and that comes out in a letter that he wrote to Henry Oldenburg in 1676, who was the secretary of the Royal Society. And in it, Newton is very concerned about the fact that Robert Boyle, who, by the way, is sometimes called the father of modern chemistry, who was a devoted alchemist himself, Newton is concerned about the fact that Boyle has revealed too much about a so-called Sophic Mercury, a kind of initial ingredient of the Philosopher's Stone. So Newton tells Oldenburg that he would like to commend Boyle to high silence. He's really worried that word will get out. Why? He's worried that scientific secrets of a really radical sort are going to be loosed upon the world, and as a result, tremendous damage could occur.
And the ultimate prize everyone was competing to discover? The Philosopher's Stone.
They even have descriptions of it. It was typically thought to be a sort of ruby red material that was fusible in the heat. And you added it to a molten metal and it would instantaneously transmute it into gold, or in some cases, silver. Many people also thought that it was a panacea. It could also cure the human body of any sort of illness.
Today, most of us know the Philosopher's Stone as a plot point in the first Harry Potter movie. But it wasn't a fairy tale to Newton. He was obsessed with trying to uncover the laws of nature, secrets maybe even deeper than the laws of physics. And alchemy was science back then. Newton ran experiments in his lab and kept reams of notebooks. In fact, he wrote approximately 1 million words on alchemy over his lifetime.
It's just sort of, you know, one damn thing after the next, right?
And the problem for an historian like Bill Newman, these alchemical notebooks were written in code.
For example, he refers to something that he calls the Green Lion in his experimental notebooks. Nobody's been able to figure out exactly what that meant to him. He talks about, for example, the two serpents. He also talks about something he calls Sapphic Salamoniac. Well, what are these things?
So it's hard to figure out what exactly Newton was doing, but his experiments involved mixing and boiling various metals and ores and dipping them into acids, basically breaking down these substances in order to transform them.
Newton was trying to create more and more volatile compounds. He was trying to replicate processes that he believed to be taking place under the surface of the earth. So he had a theory that metals are being generated within the earth, always. The earth, according to Newton, is a living being. He calls it a sort of cosmic vegetable, right? So this is what Newton thinks is happening within the earth. And it involves heating up materials, vaporizing them. That's really important for understanding what he's trying to do in the laboratory because he's interested in replicating what's going on beneath the surface of the earth.
This work in the lab could be dangerous. In fact, Newman has reproduced a number of Newton's experiments at some personal risk.
So this is actually a rather exciting process. You get a quite vigorous reaction with a lot of boiling and heat given off, and also, quite poisonous red fumes of nitrogen dioxide. So the first time I did this, you know, I got some boiling over of the solution. I've always been very careful to do it under a fume hood because I knew that it was likely to release this poisonous gas. But anyway, it's exciting all the same. I've done it many times, and you just have to be careful and control the situation.
So you have to remember, Newton was doing all of this in secret. It was very different from his work in physics and optics, which he did want the world to know about. Alchemists, on the other hand, had their own private networks and back channels for communicating with each other.
They certainly presented themselves as a sort of a secret club. The term adept was used for someone who had actually attained the Philosopher's Stone, who actually reached the limits of the alchemical enterprise. They were considered to be a kind of superhuman in a way, not only for the fact that they had actually, according to the stories, arrived at the Philosopher's Stone, but also for their ability to conceal their knowledge while also revealing it to those who were worthy to have it. They were considered to be the chosen sons of God. I mean, this was a term that was actually used.
But it raises the question of whether Newton regarded himself as some kind of mystic. Maybe not in the modern religious sense, but as if he had access to or wanted to have access to secret knowledge in the Gnostic sense.
I think in that old sense of mysticism, yes. The sense that alchemy was a form of secret knowledge that had to be imparted by word of mouth or else had to be intuited by someone who had special abilities, special cognitive powers.
Newton never did find the Philosopher's Stone, though he did create a number of new metallic compounds, some of which have never been reproduced to this day. And there's one more thing about Isaac Newton. He had the right temperament to be an alchemist. By all accounts, he was obsessive, arrogant, and generally not a nice person to be around.
Yeah, probably one of the least nice people to be around. Yeah, Newton was, he was a loner. When you got close to him, it was dangerous because he could turn on you. I think perhaps some of Newton's personality traits can be explained if you think of him as somebody who was trying to become an adept, an alchemical master, because the adepts were themselves the ultimate loners, because anyone you trusted might reveal that you have the knowledge of the Philosopher's Stone, and then you'd wind up strangled in your bed because somebody would have wanted to steal it.
You get the sense that given Newton's personality, didn't like a lot of people, that actually that fit pretty well with a life in alchemy because you had to be very quiet and secretive about it.
Yes, exactly. And also, the alchemist was supposed to be essentially smarter than everybody else.
And Newton had no doubt that he was smarter than everyone else.
And he was right, actually.
That's William Newman talking with Steve Paulson. Newman is a historian of science at Indiana University and author of Newton the Alchemist.